Welcome everyone, the Calisthenics Insider Podcast by Goro Nation is back. My name is Phil and today's guests are Sergio Di Pasquale and Max Shu. I'm really looking forward to this endurance talk. We talked about how body fat percentage influences your performance, how running helps with endurance, and how reps in reserve and training until failure influences your progress. We're happy that you're back here with us. Let's continue this Calisthenics podcast journey together. Give it a thumbs up if you enjoyed that we're back. Thank you everyone for the support. Let's go. Welcome everyone back to the Calisthenics Insider podcast by Goro Nation. My name is Phil and today we have a really special episode. We have an endurance episode, two of the most famous, most successful endurance athletes right now in the calisthenics scene. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Welcome, Max. Welcome, Sergio.
Hello, everyone.
Yes, perfect synchronization. I'm happy to have you here and to talk about it. One reason why we have this talk, I see you two are like two of the faces of the endurance scene. And we've had the battle at the Calisthenics Cup at FIBO earlier this year. And you two had an incredible battle. The battle got really popular on YouTube. We have over 180,000 views on it. And people discussed under it. You have different training approaches. And today I'm really looking forward to look into these. And Sergio, you won this battle, so the first word goes to you. You went through the round incredibly well. So what are your thoughts on the battle and then overall on the competition?
All right, so the particular battle between me and Max was actually a surprise on my part. I think I said this to Max right after the battle. I did see him being very close to me at all times, and I think I really only managed to get ahead on the last set, that actually needed us to do, you know, pull-ups and then an unbroken muscle up and add the whole penalty element. So I really had to maintain my pace from beginning to end to win. And that's pretty much the approach that I've had overall for the entire competition. Just try and set a pace for myself, not really even focusing that much on the adversary, but trying my best to bring out my best performance in each round and see how it was gonna end. It's just that really. And this year, I am lucky that, you know, it went well. I was prepared. Luckily, I was healthy. I didn't have my lingering chest injury that sometimes pops up, you know, intermittently. And I felt good. I feel like I performed well. And I'm happy about the result, of course.
That's great. Yeah, it's interesting that you talk about luck. Of course, there are things that like the health, like injuries that, of course, always depend a little bit on luck. You know, everything we do in life is always a little bit dependent on luck. But still, you're currently really on a streak with your form, with your performance. You also won the Volcano Cup in Italy. Mm-hmm. Really well done. It was a great battle. Max, what are your thoughts on the battle?
Yeah, it was a really great battle, and Sergio said that I started like losing the difference started to be significant in the last routine, but I would say this is not because of the last routine, it's because of the push-ups and dips that was before, and because of that I was pumped, and that's why I was struggling in the pulling. Yeah, in the last exercise. So this was, I think, the thing where I'm significantly weaker than Sergio. That's why. So, yeah. And in general, I was well prepared. Not perfectly, because before, we talked with Phil before, and I was sick for several days and lost a little bit endurance. I expected to do better, but I'm not saying that in that case I will win. Yeah, I think that even if I was in my best shape, Sergio Will win in this routine exactly, and he's much stronger this in this routine. Yes.
But it always depends on the routine, right? Like when you plan these competitions, when you prepare yourself, you think, oh, who could I meet in which routine? You know, maybe Max, you're like more pull, like focused on pull and stronger in pull. So like different routines, different athletes, the outcome might be different, right?
Yeah, of course. And I think that it's always possible to find the routine where they are at similar level. It's easy to find the routine where one person win, and where it depends on the routine. But maybe in case of Sergio, he's super strong in everything.
Thank you.
It's hard, but I mean, in general, yeah, it depends on the routine. Very, very, very significant.
Would you say you're stronger in pull or in push, Sergio, or are you just balanced, like strong in everything?
I think I am a slightly ahead in pull-ups, actually, as far as level goes, at least when I have to keep good form. But generally, I think my level is very balanced. I really work to keep a 1-2 ratio between the performances, between pull-ups and pushing movements. And maybe on the pushes, it's even weight pushups, it's even 1-2.5. Like, for example, it was this year, like maybe the week before coming out there in Germany for the competition, or 2 weeks before, that I did my 100 pull-ups, even though, of course, they were not clean at all. And many repetitions of that set, I didn't even reach the bar with the chin, because it was a totally, for me, it was a totally new unexplored territory. So I didn't even know if I could get to the 100th rep. That's the thing. I did 100 reps on the pull-ups, and my latest record on the push-ups on a high bar, so 30 centimeters from the ground, is 250 reps without stopping. Again, these are shorties. These are very, very short ROM repetitions, but sometimes I'm just really interested in training the pace. So maintaining the breathing constant for a long period of time in the same set and see where I can get. And that's pretty much the proportion that I keep for the max attempts, let's call them that way. And that's the proportion that I keep when I structure my workouts. And pretty much that keeps me balanced between the two muscle groups, the pushing muscle group and the pulling muscle group.
Okay. So, for you, like, of course, there are some genetic things also that influence this, you know, like anatomy, that might have someone being stronger in pull movements. But like for you, it's mainly that the structure of your workout that leaves you as a balanced athlete. Okay. Interesting. What's also interesting is like you two are like, let's say fighting in the same domain, but still have like different techniques. Can you tell us more about your pull-up technique? Because it looks really efficient, you know, when you watch it, you have like a really wide grip. That's like, I think Max, you have like a more narrow grip, if I'm correct. Sergio, you have a wider grip, so like less range of motion, way that you have to get to the bar. Can you tell us more about it?
Yes, of course. So one of the main things, especially when you're racing against someone or in general against time in a time routine, which would be like a 5MD, a classic bar barometer routine, or the bar barometer requirements, right? Now the requirements is different, because for the requirements, you really need to take advantage of all the 5 minutes when you do it in an official context. But in any time routine, when you want to finish in as short of a time as possible, it is very important to study the technique of the exercise and make it efficient while not compromising the cleanliness of the form. So you have to find a midway point between the two things. And I really think that the more efficient you are, the more energy you are going to preserve. So the more you will be able to go for the long run. This counts for the single set. It counts for a short time routine, and it counts especially on the longer workouts that I like doing. Like if I have to do 5,000 pushups, they need to be efficient because I need to spend as less energy as possible. But while still complying with the general rules of validity and completion of the movement. So if you watch my movement now, I do have some, let's say, genetical conditions, factors that help me. Like I have a little bit shorter arms and a long neck, so I can maybe, you know, do a little bit less of trajectory that way. And this arm right here, because it was broken when I was little, now it doesn't really flex, doesn't go past this way. This one bends more. So I do have to kind of maybe, yeah, widen my grip a bit so that I can still work symmetrically. And I do, though, in pull-ups, I do believe in keeping a balanced width grip. Like I never go past the point where the angle of the elbow is too open. I try and always keep the forearm vertical, so perpendicular to the ground. So again, I'm all about balanced middle grounds. That's my thing. I try to get the most efficiency possible without distorting the form too much. It's the same for pull-ups. It's the same for push-ups. You're never going to see me do push-ups open like this. It's always going to be like perpendicular forearms to the ground. And that's you get the best of both worlds that way. You get the most efficiency possible while executing the exercise, and you still get a decent amount of ROM, or let's call it excursion of movement. So the amount of space that you actually travel through. That's my view on the subject.
Cool. I know, Max, we already talked about your pull-up form, and I think you also talked about the combination of pull-ups and muscle-ups that you think of when you perform your pull-ups. Can you tell us what are your thoughts on your pull-up form?
I have many notes from other people that I have different form than many people. To be honest, when I started, I thought that everybody doing pull-ups like me, but yeah, actually, after many years, I realized that no, it's a little bit different. So I'm doing pull-ups not a very efficient way. When you do an efficient, you just go mainly up and down, strict, and no additional hesitation. But in my case, I'm doing like a little bit like that, because some people say that you're pulling with your, you should pull yourself with your back, but in my case, like more arms more involved. Yeah, maybe it's true. And movement a little bit different, not very efficient, but I think that this variation of pull-ups helps me a little bit in muscle-ups, because it's more similar to the movement that you have when you're doing muscle-up. Because when you're doing muscle-up, you're a little bit distinct from the bar. I think it helps me. Regarding the efficiency of the other exercises, I'm trying to do it efficient, but regarding the pull-ups, I'm not focused on that at all. And I started before the competition. I mean, I wasn't focused before. I started to taking part in the competition, but now I'm focusing a little bit because it's obvious that it can give you some advantages when you're competing. Yeah, and now I'm trying to change the technique and Maybe it will help, but we'll see.
Nice. Yeah, so I'm interested in how the battle will go, maybe in 2025, if we repeat it with all the learnings. One top comment that I found from Rami, he said, I could be wrong, but I think Max is way too lean and shredded, and it's taking a huge toll on his performance. His body fat needs to go up a little. Yeah, this was one of the top comments, and I found this topic of body fat percentage interesting. I saw you, Sergio, also preparing really hard for the competition and also changing physique-wise in the weeks and months before the competition. And I felt you got a lot more shredded for the competition, but still to I guess, like Max at the competition, they had even a lower body fat percentage. So there were people were discussing how body fat percentage influences the performance in a positive way, in a negative way. What is the good balance? Because the routines were quite long, right? We had like 6 to 8, 10 minutes, something routines at the Calisthenics Cup. So yeah, what are your thoughts on the body fat percentage?
No, who are you asking, Philip? I'm sorry.
Sergio, start if you want.
Okay. So of course, when your body fat percentage is lower, you have less overall energy to spend in your daily life, really. So in your workouts and of course in a competition, but you just gotta be able to build that foundation of endurance, I think. And even when your body fat is lower, you can kind of manage. I say this because I came to the Germany competition weighing in at around 69 kilos, I think, 70 at most. And I kept going after that. I kept counting my calories. I kept going down in weight. And even though I didn't really check my macros that well, not really. I just, you know, I was just counting the calories, and it was working. My weight at the Volcano Fitness competition was around 66 kilos. So I was really, really light. And I guess my body fat percentage went even lower than what it was in Germany, of course, because that happens when you lose weight, like automatically. And I still felt really good physically. Now, psychologically, it took a bit of a toll. But again, it's all about having a base, a foundation from which you can take out whatever performance you need to. But right after the July competition, I went up in weight in like a week. I gained back like three kilos, and now I'm back to, I guess, 73 kilos. So I know that 66, 67 is not my natural maintaining weight. I had to keep sacrificing some amounts of food. I had to keep eating from 1900 to 2000 calories every day to maintain that weight. And with 3 hours long sessions, workout sessions, that's not the ideal. I knew that my energy reserve was lower than usual. Luckily, it was ample enough that I could still complete the whole competition. And that comes from the foundation I told you. But of course, in general, lower body weight, lower body fat percentage means you have less energy to perform. That's a given. And now if you are, again, prepared enough, you can manage, but it's still just a really timed, constrained condition because you can't really maintain it for that long, in my opinion, at least in my personal case. I went up in weight, again, 3-4 kilos in the next week, so I know that I know that this is more what was sustainable for me, staying at around this weight and being able to train for 4 or 5 hours if I wanted to, without much problems.
Yeah, makes fully sense with the long workout sessions. And what I would be interested in, what is your perfect competition weight now? If you would say, is it more the 66, 67 of the Volcano Fitness, or is it more of the 69, 70 of the Calisthenics Cup?
That would require more testing, I think, because so this is the thing. There was a difference, a main difference between the two competitions, two main differences that I could observe. The coronation routines were slightly longer, apart from the round between me and Max, which was the shortest one amongst the four. But in general, the rounds were a bit longer, like around 10 minutes routines, maybe 12 even, the final. But the weights were overall lower, especially for muscle-ups. In muscle-ups, we didn't go over 10 kilos, if I'm not mistaken. While at the Vulcano competition, the routines were shorter. All of them were around 8 minutes. But the weight on the muscle-up went up to 15 kilos. So I really can't tell yet if the shorter routines for the Vulcano competition left me with more energy to perform better on even higher weight for the muscle-ups, or if 66 kilos is still the best weight for me in the competition. But I still felt really strong at 69 in Germany too. And in that case, even if I was heavier, maybe the fact that I only had to get over the bar with just 10 kilos helped me perform better with those 3 additional kilos on my body weight. So I really need to test this again and again and find the true best weight for me, because this is the first time I've been doing weight management, really the first time from January to July, first year in 10 years of preparation. So it is something a bit new to me.
Interesting. Like, I'm also a strong believer of everybody has its perfect weight, its natural weight to do a good performance. But in your case, it's that you perform so differently, you know, like some competitions are different than the others. Then, like, I guess performing 100 pull-ups in a set or 250 push-ups is also something different than having an 8 or 10 minute routine that varies in the exercises. So a lot of factors that you have to count in. And yeah, I think like the testing, I know Max, you're also a big fan of testing, like testing creatine versus no creatine, you know, like you also do experiments with yourself. And yeah, let us know, what do you think? Were you too skinny, too shredded for the competition, for the Calisthenics Cup routine?
For the Calisthenics Cup, I think I was like in good, in my weight. Regarding my observation, regarding the weight, how you perform, I think the longer distance, the more difference you will see between being lean or not. And I would say that, for example, for very short routines, like 1 minute or less a little bit, so under 1 minute, maybe under 2 minutes, it's better to be lean, because you're not heavy, you can do fast, and you don't need a lot of energy. And so if you have maybe competition in like 3 exercises with big rests, and you only need to show your max, probably it's better to be lean and lightweight. But for example, for the routines that we had on the Calisthenics Cup, it's better to have like some additional banks of energy. And also, it depends how big weights used, because when you lean, it's harder to do with additional weights, muscle ups, pull ups, dips, and so on. So yeah, you need to adjust your weight according to according to your goals, maybe according to your according to the competition, and it's your decision. I think that maybe if I get some more additional weight, maybe for the Calisthenics Cup, it could be a little bit better, but we will never know. So, yes, you need to experiment, you need to test, and even if you show different results with your test, it doesn't mean that it's truth for everybody, and even could be different for you in other conditions. So yeah, you need to spend a lot of time to understand what's going on with your body, what's best for you.
Do I understand you correctly that you don't want to experiment with it? Like, because you said we will never know.
I mean, it was already. So even if I do the same routines better, it doesn't mean that I did it better because I got additional weight. Maybe I just became strong. I don't know. So it's hard to compare with everything the same. Yeah, but. You can't fix everything and just change some small part.
True. From street lifting, but also from my personal experience in like lower endurance, for pull-ups and muscle-ups, it's better to be lighter also. And for dips and squats, you don't feel the difference that much. Do you see it the same, or is it good for every exercise to be like more lean?
So I would say at some stage, when you're losing weight, it becomes only better because, you know, don't want to upset you, maybe, a lot of additional, fat. So yeah, maybe when you're losing it, you're just losing the weight that is just stopping you from doing reps. But when you're at maybe 10% body fat, or maybe 12, so this the numbers where you will see the difference. But if you have like 20% of body fat and you will lose till 15, it's not the thing that we are talking here. It's just getting in shape, and I think it affects only in positive way here.
So from my experience in this period of cutting weight from January to July, my observation has been the following. As soon as I went below 70 kilos, so when I reached the 68 to 69 range for my body weight, the feeling of the weight especially on the dips was completely different. The way I felt with an additional 70 kilos, which used to be right there below my body weight because I was at around the range of 71, 72. In contrast with the feeling of the same weight, 70 kilos added on the dips when I was 69 was completely different. And the rep ranges I could work at went from like 8 to 10 reps to 5 to 6 repetitions. While in the meantime, the pull-ups didn't really suffer as much. The pulling movement, I think it was at that same time that I actually managed to get a personal record on the pull-ups with 40 kilos, which is when I did the 20 reps with 40 kilos. Of course, again, not perfect, but it was still just an attempt at seeing how many times I could move that weight up and down in a decent portion of excursion of movement. And but the fact is, when I went down to 66, I had already put completely aside the pretty much the higher weights, and I was just training with 20 kilos at most, just to stay ready for the competition, training as specifically as possible for the July competition, which again didn't have any weight above the 20 kilo range. So probably when I was at 66, my pull-ups were much weaker as well, because that's generally what happens. Just as Max said, when your body weight goes down, all your lifts pretty much go down, intended as a weighted lifts. But what is affected the most, and just like that, like in an instant, is the pushing movements, especially the dips. If you get below a certain range and the weight you want to move goes beyond your own body weight, you're gonna feel that shit pretty much.
Yeah, okay. That's yeah, then it's the same experience. So yeah, what would be interesting for me, do you plan your trainings yourself or do you have help from an external coach? Because Sergio, I know you're coaching as well. And what I would be interested in, like, I'm always fascinating if athletes themselves also get a coach, even though they are a coach themselves. But what do you think about, like, doing your own programming, having an external coach who looks like more from a macro, more from a bird's eye view onto your performance? How did you program your preparation?
So my planning, I've always done that myself. I think I do have kind of a radical position on the subject. Maybe this position won't be liked by everyone. I am trying to actually tone it down, be more moderate. But my initial position was that it doesn't even make that much sense for someone who coaches and trains other people to get an external coach. Because if you are not able to obtain the results you want yourself, who are you then to teach when you need someone else's help planning out your own workouts? Now, I know that sounds really harsh, but I think there is some truth to that. At the same time, I am starting to see the importance of an external eye that can really tell you when you're maybe compromising your form too much. And maybe just give you an advice. So what I'm trying to do now is, of course, I've always been planning my own workouts. I almost never even asked for advice to the only person I regard as my teacher, which is Zef Zaccavelli, founder of Barbarians. I've always been observing him, what he does, studying what he does, trying to really really think about it and come to my own conclusions myself and apply them to myself without really asking for that much guidance, even if I have the opportunity, because I do like even making mistakes myself and learning the lessons the hard way. But yeah, I never had a coach that told me what to do. And even if I had, I would have probably just taken his routine and doubled it, tripled it, quadrupled it, because that's the way I am. And yeah, so this is it. But right now, what I try to do is I still do everything for myself, but I do have friends and colleagues, let's call them that. Like an example that comes to mind is my brother Christian, which is not yet as much experienced as me, but he is a great coach, he's a great athlete, and he does have a real, really good critical eye. So I stay mentally flexible so that when someone tells me something about my form, I take it into consideration. And if I really see that applying their advice can make me better, of course, I take no, issue in actually applying their advice, because it might be helpful, but I want to do things myself. That's the closure of that. And I will always be doing things myself.
Great. Interesting. Max, what do you think about coaching? Have you ever had a coach? How do you approach such a competition preparation as well?
I had coach only in my childhood, and it was like when I was doing karate or football, but not the calisthenics, because I would say our sport is relatively young, and so when you're like a good performer and when it's hard to find somebody that is better near you, that is doing better, so you don't see a big motivation to find a coach or somebody who will help you here. Yeah, of course, it's good when you talk with top athletes and getting advices, discuss something. Yeah, of course, it's very important and useful. But in general, when you make it your own way, and it's completely different from what other doing, so you don't know who to ask, who should teach you, because they never maybe nobody done this before, and maybe if you ask somebody, he will lead you to other direction, or even so. Yeah, I prefer to try myself and check the results. Smiling.
How I see you too, I will just tell my personal opinion. I think what you are doing is so crazy and is so without any example in the world. Of course, Sergio, you're inspired by Zef, but even like today with your routines, you're putting it everything on a new level, what he was doing, like as far as I know. No front, Zef, but like everything you do is so crazy and is so next level that it's hard to find like the idol or the person who already did this path, because you're like leading this path right now. And on the second thing, it's so, there is so much work that you put in, so much volume, so much time, so much energy, that there, of course, there might be ways that are more efficient than the ones that you are going in theory. But like for you to be able to keep up this volume, this training rhythm, and these 3-hour, 4-hour workouts, it has to fit to your training style. So you have to find your own training style that suits you and your goals that you like. What you say, Max, like your pull-ups are not the most efficient, but you do them because you want to boost your muscle-ups with them. So everyone has their own reasons and their own individual goals. Which makes it really hard for someone from the outside to tell you, hey, Max, you should change your pull-up technique. Hey, Sergio, you should do that. You know, like this is how I see it. Of course, there might be more efficient ways, but this is the way that you like and that you are motivated to do, because like this, you are able to invest that much energy into it.
It makes sense. I personally am trying to paved the way for something new. Following in the footstep of Zef, as far as a training style and training philosophy, putting my own twist on it, and reaching a new level that could inspire the even newer generations. Like the nickname Zef gave me when he met me the first time in 2017, that's when I got my gold wins, is new era. And that's precisely what it means. It's trying to create a new realm of performance that's never seen before, so that you can be a new pioneer maybe, and show the world something that has never been done, and open up their minds to do even greater things in the future, and just keep the cycle going. Pretty much.
Nice. You are running, Sergio. I saw you're posting always your from your running app. You're posting your distances, and I like to watch them and to compare them to my running times. Can you tell us the reason why are you running? Do you do that for like weight loss? Do you do it for stamina, for strength, endurance? What is the reason behind it?
All right, so the first main reason is that I love running. You know, before I even started calisthenics, I had the idea of getting in shape, and I didn't know how. First thing I did was I started running. Then, when I discovered calisthenics, and I was 16 years old back then, I think I started running at like 15, you know. Then I was 16 years old when I discovered calisthenics, and I just put running aside and stopped running for good until, let's say, 3 years ago now, I think. And now I've been running sort of consistently for 3 years. And that's how I managed to see my performance go up gradually, as in everything, as it works with everything that you do, that you dedicate some time to. And so I love running. Being you know what I like doing the most. The training sessions that truly represent me are the ones that are 4, 5, 6 hour long sessions that count thousands and thousands of reps. Because even if the session is excruciatingly arduous and it takes a mental toll, a psychological toll for sure, the feeling that you get at the end, when you get to that finish line, it's always been worth it to me. So running is more of the same in a sense, in that sense, I just love what happens when I actually get to that finish line, when I complete the amount of set kilometers that I set for myself. And it just fuels my soul in a sense. Then if we talk about physical, so athleticism, I don't really think that running helps calisthenics that much from a performance standpoint, because you are using two completely different energetical systems, where one, you are even in the most saturated type of work, like let's say on the minute, like a imam style training in calisthenics, what is sustainable for a longer span of time is working 30 seconds, resting 30 seconds. So you fill out the first 30 seconds of the minute and you rest for the second half of the minute. You can kind of keep that going. If you work for more than half of the minute and rest for less of that amount, you are gonna be in an energetical deficit very soon, and that little portion of the workout is gonna last like at best 5 to 10 minutes. Then you're gonna be dead. But what is kind of sustainable is half and half, and the majority of the time in reality you're just using like 10-20% of the time to just get in some reps, and the rest is constituted by rest times in your training sessions. This is for calisthenics. While you're running, you never stop. It's a much more bland type of work, but it's one foot after the other from the beginning to the end of the race. So there's not that much transfer. Of course, we do share one single body. So anything that raises our level of athleticism is gonna have a little bit of transfer, you know, in everything else that we do. But it doesn't really help calisthenics or vice versa. What running does for me, so the main reason I do it for, is to train the mental, the psychological. Because if you are able to start running, so there's no walking involved, you just run, even if the pace goes gradually down, you run for 1, 2, 3 consecutive hours, maybe more in the future. Anything else that poses to you as a challenge, so a routine, let's say, or a day of competition, is gonna feel like light work mentally. And that's the reason I do it.
Great. That's really nice. So yeah, totally makes sense. But when you talk about imam, you have 30 seconds of performance, 30 seconds of rest. Would it make sense to do interval running, like interval training with running? This would be something different. When we're talking about running, I think you're always running around 5, 6, 7, 8 kilometers, right? In your after workouts or something.
So not really. Right now, I think I'm at around 12 to 15 kilometers distance, like consistent. And sometimes I run a half a marathon just to test it out. If maybe it's a rest day from calisthenics, I have more time at my disposal and more energy at my disposal for running. So that's the range right now, between 10 and 15. That's the consistent amount of distance that I run, even on workout days, on calisthenics workout days. And I'm planning on doing more if possible, just gradually building there as well.
Nice. What do you think about interval training, like interval running?
I haven't really tried it that much, not in really differentiated forms. Like sometimes I do slower laps because I run in a circle pretty much, and faster paced laps. So I alternate them. Maybe I do two slower laps and one accelerated lap, but there's still not that much difference in pace. So I'm all about the long distance. Never really done anything that sets apart to portions of the distance I run so much that it can be considered interval running. So I might have to test it, try it out, and then I could report on the actual effects.
Have you ever thought about running? Have you ever integrated it into your workouts, Max?
So yeah, before going to Germany, I used to run quite often. Right now, I'm not. I want to increase frequency of my running, but it was like, you know, after moving, you need to do a lot of stuff. You don't have a lot of time, and yeah, you have other priorities, and yeah, because as Sergio said, and I completely agree with that, running is good, but it doesn't affect calisthenics. A little bit, maybe, yes. But also, if you run a lot, it can affect in negative way, because your body need to recover from running and needs to improve your legs and maybe other your body parts that you don't need in calisthenics. So yeah, I'm running just because I love run, and time to time I run long distances, like close to 10 kilometers. Time to time I run short distances, like 100 meters, 200 meters, interval running. Yeah, regarding interval running, I would say it's more functional. It's, I would say, close to the real life. You can use it to maybe run from the dog or from the police. Yeah, so it you feel different when you run short distances, and can see the difference between sprinters and long distance runners. So sprinters are usually more muscular, more powerful. Yeah, it's different things. I love running, and I want to start running it more. And maybe we in October in my company where I work, we have a charity running, and maybe in Munich, and I want to take part there. I think the distance will be around 10 kilometers. So yeah, we need to prepare to that, and yeah.
And we're looking forward to the time. At least I am. So
time, I can tell you my best times in 10 kilometers. It was 45 minutes.
That's very good.
Nice. That's nice.
I think mine was around 47.
Usually when I used to run quite often, it was around 50, my usual time in 10 kilometers. My best time in 100 meters is 11.8 when I was in best shape. Now, without training, probably it will be around 13 seconds. Yeah, but I think if I start to train it, it will recover and will be under 13. What else? My best in 3 kilometers was 10:45. Yeah, so these numbers. Ah, yeah, in 200 meters, I did 26 something. 25 something. 25 something.
Nice. That's cool, because I like these benchmarks for my own training, just to, like, in general, I'm a big fan of benchmarks, because then you have something to push towards too. Like, Sergio, when you began, you had the benchmarks of Zef being there, like the workouts that you can, just some orientation, you know, because when you see these, you know what's possible. And somehow, like, if my goal is to beat my idol Max Chu in 100 meters, now I have the possibility, because I have his time. And this is why I'm really, like, happy that you share these numbers for people to have some motivation, some goal to set for themselves. Even if it shouldn't be a limit, you know, like people should aim to surpass you. It's not that you are not human or something, but it's a really good benchmark to set and to have a goal.
Of course, yeah, that's one of the best things that people can have at their disposal, especially when there is someone more experienced that has achieved some goals that they feel they also want to achieve, having a direction, having a actual precise objective to shoot for, helps speeding the process up usually. Then when you end up being the first to do certain things, it's a whole different realm for sure, but it's still a path worth walking, in my opinion.
That's true. Nice. So on the opposite of the whole running endurance 10 kilometers, 15 kilometers thing, I know you both use the GoRonation dip belt in your trainings, and you are both big fans of weighted trainings. So what is the importance of weighted trainings to prepare and to prepare even for, like, longer routines where we also included the additional weights? How do you integrate weighted workouts, Sergio?
So weighted, I've always been doing weighted work since pretty much the beginning of my training journey. If I remember correctly, I started integrating lower weights into my routines at around 6 months of working out. Maybe it was even too early, but I was so excited to start to do that. I didn't even have a dip belt at that point. I used a backpack, and I used to fit it with rocks, pretty much weighted on a scale, and just put it on my back. Then the first kinds of dip belts that I used were like some karate belts, or some like that. Then right now I finally settled for the GoRonation dip belt, because I really do believe it's one of the best out there. And I kind of feel sorry for the fact that I didn't use it as soon as I received it. But at that point, I was really focused in preparing the true endurance competition, which was completely bodyweight. And then as soon as I got done with that, like 3 years ago, I got back onto weighted training, because again, I can't really say how much it helps, but I know it does. I know getting stronger performances in weighted does help you, especially with power, with speed, and that just increases the margin of repetitions that you can reach in a certain amount of time. If I didn't have, let's say, the strength to do sets of 20 dips with 50 kilos, I would have never had the speed, the explosiveness to complete 150 dips consecutive without stopping on a bodyweight performance. Of course, after a certain threshold of reps, you do need that endurance foundation. You do need that breath control and the ability to keep and maintain the pace up to the deep waters. So maintain it as long as possible. And that's through breathing. That's through fueling your own engine, your own machine for a long period of time. But the speed at which you do that, the speed at which you can set your pace, I think is also determined on the explosiveness that you can build mainly with weighted reps. So they both feed into each other. We are working on a spectrum. So, of course, if you only train train for one rep maxes, you're at this end of the spectrum, and here you got, let's say, the 100 reps body weight. So of course, if you train around here, your gains are only gonna extend this much on the spectrum, and they're gonna affect this range. So maybe you're gonna be stronger at 5 reps sets, 8 reps sets, but your body weight is gonna be little to no affected at all. While if you train in this central range, so you do sets of 10, 15, 20 reps with moderate to high weight, everything is gonna benefit. So that's why I prefer to put on specifically, the average is 50 kilos that I use in my training sessions. And I know that both my one rep max, which is not my main goal, and my body weight performance gets a benefit from that weighted work that I do.
Nice. What are your goals, Max, mostly with training with weights? I know you do pull-ups with weights, you do dips with weights, push-ups, I think also sometimes with the weight vest.
My goals is to increase strength and explosiveness. And again, I completely agree here with Sergio, because you need to use weights, adjust weights according to your goals. Because if you do dips with 100 kg, it probably won't affect. Again, maybe in negative way it will affect to your body weight in dips. Yes. And so I can't say a lot here about that. And so that's why I'm mostly using not big weights, because I'm focusing more on endurance. And usually during workouts, I'm using from 20 to 40, maybe 50 kilos, around that. And I never done my reps, one rep max in dips. I tried with pull-ups, it was around 80 kilos. It was a long time before, ago. I did 88. Yes, 88. It was with my friend. He was, on me. also, I think that one rep max is a little bit unsafe, especially when you're old as me. You need to take care of your body, and I think body weighted exercises or close to body weight with not big weights is the most safe, and maybe it's harder mentally than big weights, but safe, and I'm on this. This is tough.
Do you think it's healthy how you're training? Like, because performance sports, performing at the top level, I think is never healthy, like super, super healthy. But to you too, what you think, like, do you think what you're doing is healthy for longevity, for becoming old and healthy? What do you think?
Man, it's a tough question. Like, with time, gradually, I've had to come to terms with the fact that pushing on the accelerator all the time is not gonna lead to a nice end result. If our goal truly is longevity and doing this for as long of a time as possible, I think the best thing is to take it slow. But then you need to find the balance where you're still pushing yourself every time a little bit over that edge. If not, you're not even gonna, you're not even gonna improve and get better. It's really hard. You need to know yourself. You need to put aside your ego and just work as safely as possible while exerting yourself to the best of your possibilities. If you want to stay on top, if not, I feel like you're still gonna regress at a certain point. when I find myself at a crossroad, and I do have to make the choice, like in a hard training session, if I have to do one more set, one more round, if I have to go back down the pyramid, I do feel it. I do feel it personally inside myself, pause, that the best choice is always the hardest one, pretty much, even though it might not be the best from a conservation standpoint or for a preservation standpoint. As an athlete, my mindset will never change. I know that. And you need to find a balance with that attitude, with that innate instinct, because if you let that take over too much, you are going to get hurt. It's a very difficult balance to find. So I'm still working on that pretty much. I'm still working on finding the right middle ground that will allow me to be doing this past my 50th year of age. That's the goal. At least I got no excuse for 50. Zeph is almost 50 and he's still replicating, executing performances that blow the minds of people that are 30 years younger than him, strong athletes. And, like me pretty much, I'm 20 years younger than him, almost exactly. And it still blows my mind seeing him jump on the bar and doing what he does. So I got no excuse not to get to 50 and being able to do a God set. That's a given. Then past 50, at least for now, that's unexplored. I'm gonna see what I can do, you know, one day at a time.
That's true. Max, what do you think?
I think with the high pace, you're sacrificing with your health a little bit. And usually what I see from my experience, so if I'm doing something very extremely big amount of reps or something with, when I'm trying to do the best results or preparing for the competition, usually before that or after that, I'm getting sick. I see it quite often. And for example, 3 weeks ago, before going to Italy, I did 50 muscle-ups under 4 minutes. This was my second time in my life when I did that.
That's crazy.
I was also a little bit surprised, and after maybe 30 minutes I started feeling that, oh shit, probably Italy under danger, and probably I spent my vacation here at home. But yeah, I'm happy that I was managed to get better and went there. So, you're always sacrificing when you're on a high pace, on a high level, and you need to be careful. And for some persons, it's hard because you understand that you can do more, maybe this will give you some additional strength, and you don't want to lose this possibility. You want to do your best, and you do as hard as you can. And yeah, this can lead to not very, very good stuff. Yeah.
Okay. Before we come to a summarization of today's talk and some final thoughts, I have one last topic that was asked by the community on the Instagram stories. Your opinion and your personal approach on the topic of training until failure and having reps in reserve. I know, Max, you often, like, you train more often to failure also, as far as you do the workouts when I'm visiting you. So this is what I don't like visiting you, that I have to go until failure. And I'm like more friend of EMOMs, like having like a steady, steady reps and reserves and steady pauses and stuff. Max, what is your approach on training until failure and having reps in reserve?
Yeah, as you said, you're more friend of EMOMs than my friend. Yes. I think that it's very important to do, or at least several times, reps until failure. Maybe not all workouts, but I think you should feel this, should reach this feeling, should understand how your body behaves in such conditions, how you recover. Because when you, for example, it's my opinion, when you're doing EMOM 10 reps each, for example, each minute, and this will increase your endurance. You'll train your body to recover after 10 reps. And if you like start to do more reps, your body won't be ready for that. Kind of ready, but you will see the difference. And so that's why I'm trying to simulate the conditions that you usually have during the competitions or the record attempt or something like that.
Now I'm really curious about your opinion, Sergio. Do you train until failure sometimes?
So I wouldn't say that I train to failure as a style of training, but failure is a big part of my training sessions. I think that there is a whole different many different types of failure that you can reach. You can reach complete muscular failure. You can reach, let's say, technical failure, partial failure. You can reach, pace, rhythm failure. That's when you stop the pace. And these are all different variables that you can observe and on which you can apply progression to. So you can monitor them. For example, in a set of 100 push-ups, today you stop at 80 because you start getting fatigued at 80. And then you have to grind the last 20 reps. In a week or in 2 weeks, you might stop at 83 and it's just 17 reps to grind. Or maybe after the stop, you can do another 5 reps in a straight pace. And now you're at 87 and it's just 12 singles that you have to grind. This is it for me. Failure, it always happens in my workouts. I can reach failure in a EMOM, in an under minute session. I just have to modify the variables. I just have to select a higher rep range, or I just change the interval. It's not on the minute anymore. Maybe it can be on the 30, on the 45. So that being 30 seconds, 45 seconds. And you just adjust all these elements. I can add weights, of course, and that helps me reach failure at a lower rep range, because if I can do sets of 50 pull-ups, multiple of them, with around 10 minutes rest in between, if I put on 20 kilos, now pretty much the margin at which I start feeling fatigue gets down to half of that rep range. So it's around 20 to 25 reps and I reach failure much faster. Now it can be grip failure and not muscular failure, but it's still a form of failure. It is a manifestation of failure that on which then you can improve on. And also there's one thing though. This is a lesson that I have learned myself through experience, but it is something that I have just heard articulated by Zef in his latest workshop, and it's the following. If you always train to failure as a style, as I was saying, so you try to go to complete muscular failure on every single set that you do, you are probably going to be doing less work that you are actually capable of doing. While if you just set up a goal of reps to reach, So let's say you have to do 100 pull-ups total in a training session. Now, given that you have that finish line precisely defined, you can go beyond failure. You can fail and you can keep going. This works on a single set. This works as a mono reps to complete. It can be applied to many elements of your workout. But going past failure, knowing that many times you can just rest and recharge and go for another set instead of stopping because you think that you reached failure, I think it's actually better. So try and go beyond failure, and that builds real endurance, in my opinion. A failure is, I don't want to say it's an illusion, but you can recharge from that quickly than you think, in my opinion. And you can keep going and accumulate some more work. Of course, you don't have to make it a torture. You don't have to be at a certain point where you can't even lift yourself up at the bar anymore. But yeah, maybe just doing sets to failure doesn't teach you how to really utilize your entire pool of energy in a workout. And I feel like the latter is more important to learn how to do.
What do you think about that, Max?
Yeah, I already shared my opinion, but failure, yeah, it's very important. And Sergio said you can reach different kind of failures, and you should understand what only when you're doing failures you can understand on what you should focus. And for example, in my case, when I'm doing pull-ups, I see that the first thing that don't want work is my forearms. And if this in case when I'm doing pull-ups while I'm just immediately after warm-up, but if I do a lot of sets, I see that my back started to be pumped, my arms started to, I mean biceps, getting tired, and this is how you can determine your weak part. And as I said before, you need to simulate the conditions that you want to improve, like for competitions or a record or something like that.
Yeah, like the weak link analysis is an interesting thing that goes together with the training until failure, because when training until failure, you see, oh, is it the grip that loosens first, or is it my biceps that is like sore, like that's like sore first, or like tired first. So yeah, that's definitely a great tool or benefit of training until failure, or like training on high intensity in general. So as you see, with all my thoughts, with all my questions concerning running, concerning the rep range, the until failure, the coaching, everyone is looking for the secret of endurance calisthenics. Why are you two on such a high level? And like many people are striving to get there. Is there any secret? What do you think makes the big difference, or what do most people do differently than you two? Sergio, maybe you want to start.
Okay. I do believe that the most determining factor is consistency together with time invested. I do know for a fact that probably amongst the various endurance athletes out there in our discipline, in our sport, I am one of those who has put in more hours and done the most amount of reps, pretty much. I think there's a high chance of that being the truth. Now, I don't know how many reps Max has done in his life. I don't know how many reps, other prominent figures in the scene have done. I don't have, you know, that those reports at my disposal. All I can testify is that I have done a lot of repetitions. I have invested a lot of time in working out, and I love doing it. I've been doing it for more than 10 years now. And right now, after the July competition, this was the first time I took an entire week off of training in 10 years of experience. First time I counted 7 days of no touching the bars. And maybe now that I'm pretty much done with vacation, let's say, and I can get back on track, even though I am in an off season, I count on maybe, you know, maybe doing something similar, or maybe it's going to be different. Like maybe it's going to be from now on, if I want to keep competing, I'm going to have a actual preparation period of the year. And then maybe if everything goes according to plans and I manage to win, then I can keep some, I can take some more time off. That's something to be seen, of course, in the future. But it's consistency. You just gotta keep going. You gotta, of course, stay safe, not get injured, listen to your body and all that. That is very important. Learn from your mistakes, apply the corrections so that you can stay consistent. It is better to do a whole week of training instead of doing one single session, you know, hurt yourself, and then you got to rest for 2 weeks. That mathematically, that doesn't add up to a good, baggage of experience. You are doing less work than someone who's doing, you know, something easier, but he is doing it every day. And that's the principle I try to apply. Then when you do something every day, and it also pushes yourself, then you can reach the next level. You need to find the balance between those two things: consistency, sustainability, and still looking to every time do something more, something a little bit more, a little bit better than the last time. That's the key to progression, progressive overload, or however we want to call it. That's the key to success in my eyes.
Great. The thing that I also want, because you said time invested, and this is maybe also a difference. Max, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you're not putting it as much time right now as Sergio is, right? Or your workout sessions are a little bit shorter.
So my workouts usually takes 1 hour, 1.5 hours, 2 hours, so from 1 to 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And Sergio, you're like several hours.
Average is three. Average is three. I have shorter. I also have like 1 hour sessions, but that's only when I'm strict on time for my schedule or other things I have to do. And sometimes when I'm, you know, I have a whole day of freedom, I can do a 5 hour session. Average is three.
This is what I thought about before, because Max, you're training more until failure, because maybe in 1 hour there is no other way for you to get enough like intensity or like muscle activation into a workout.
Yeah. So in general, you're doing less reps, but have this feeling of being exhausted after.
And a lot more volume, like because I think if Sergio trains 3 hours on average, he has the possibility to put in like a lot more volume and doesn't need the high intensity, because it would just drain the volume. And in your case, it's like 1 hour, 1.5, 2 hours. You need to push, you know, like you need to use the time efficiently, let's say.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you need to take this into consideration.
So Max, to summarize, what do you think makes the difference of like the whole things that we talked about, the body fat percentage, the training style, etc.?
Training style. My thoughts that Sergio, doing much more reps in general, and that's why he also needs more, a little bit more. Like energy and a little bit more body fat, and so I don't think that for him it will be very efficient to be lean. So probably just use his comfortable weight and just continue to work. And, yeah, so as you see, style's a little bit different. Not a little, but yeah, different, and this leads to different results.
Nice. This is why I wanted to have this discussion or this conversation, because I think as even like you two have performing in the same, in the same domain of the sport. And then of course, calisthenics is still a small sport, and endurance calisthenics can be split in so many more areas, like one set rep, max reps, you know, like longer routines, and like, but still like you're competing in the same competition with training, different training styles. So yeah, I'm really happy we made this work. We made this conversation work with some different thoughts and also some deeper thoughts, because I think seeing your trainings on Instagram, both of you, is just mind blowing. And you ask yourself, how do they get there? You know, what are the thoughts? And this is what these podcasts should help with.
Excuse me, Philip.
Yes.
I don't know if we are on the, I think the ending part of the call. If I may, I wanted to say one last thing, especially, you know, to return back the compliment to Max for the last question you asked, the one on the training style. I do think that Max is really, really, really strong. And I do believe, just like one of the earlier comments that we looked upon, that if he chooses to change a little bit of his form style, like the execution of the exercises, and focuses on efficiency for the various exercises, he can apply, he can channel all that strength that he's already got, which is really mind-blowing, and reach even higher and higher levels of performance. I do think that his margin of repetitions could be much, much higher with all the strength that he's got. He just maybe needs to move a little differently, a little bit more efficiently in the various movement patterns to really be able to make use of all that strength, in my opinion.
Yes, thank you, Sergio. It's, I appreciate it. It's very important. Thank you. Yeah, could be, probably, and maybe I will try to focus on more on the, on this side, and maybe we will see. Right now, I have a little bit different goals, but yeah, thank you for the advice. And from my side, I don't know which advice I can give you, because you're super strong and
no, I'm always open for any advice, really. Anything that comes, you know, from the outside, I try and really, at least now, I try to take into consideration and see if I can apply it. Because if it's genuine advice and it is to make me better, and it would work in making me better, I take it as another source of help. So I always appreciate it.
Great. Then we're coming to an end of this podcast episode. Will we see you both competing at Calisthenics Cup 2025? Will we see maybe a rematch if the battle tree is like the battle tree gods are with us? What are your thoughts?
I'm down for that. Yes. Right now I'm resting, but maybe the more I rest, the more hunger I get back. So we're going to see. This year, I will be sincere. This year, I really felt like I needed to compete to prove that I was able to compete at high levels and maybe win at high levels to some people that were doubting me. Now that everyone and myself, you know, at first, have got that confirmation, maybe my psychological, whole approach will be slightly different. But I am a competitive person, so if I do get back into the right mindset, I wouldn't mind competing again. I do like competing. It's just never been my main focus. My main focus is spreading the culture, the history, the vision, the lifestyle associated with my style of calisthenics, and maybe build some legacy for the future. That's my main goal. But if competing can help in that goal as well, I'll keep doing that too.
Great. Max, what do you think?
If I will be allowed to go out from the nursing home for old people, yeah, of course I will take part in the competition. Like for Sergio, it wasn't the main goal for me. I never said that I'm the best of the best, and I understand just that I'm good, but not the best. And I love these emotions of the competitions, and the preparation part, it's very exciting. It adds colors to your life, and I would be super happy to take part there.
Awesome. That's really great to hear. Thank you both for your time, for your sharing of knowledge. That's really nice.
Thank really you, Philip, for the opportunity to be here.
Yeah, thank you, my friend, and also thank you, Sergio. And I was super happy to be here.
Awesome. Both of you, enjoy the rest of summer. Enjoy your little bit of rest, Sergio. And all the best. We see each other soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Goodbye. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone, for watching until the end. You're one of the rare ones who watches such a long podcast till the end. Leave us in the comments below if you like the podcast. Give it a thumbs up if you liked it, and we really appreciate it. Let's go through this journey together, and see you in the next one.